Shit, okay.
Coming up on TMS, yesterday I was a Canadian.
Paramount takes a dump on YouTube.
Black coffee makes you crazy.
Ooh, we are jacking up the moon.
Steven Tyler, no like the dawn.
Fitness geek.
Jury duty and more, except no fitness geek because he's sick, but we'll do something else there.
Sickness geek.
On this, on this episode of The Morning Stream.
Hello, and welcome to Universal Studios' Star Trek Adventure, courtesy of Paramount Pictures. I'm Gene Roddenberry, and some of you may know me as the creator of Star Trek.
The Morning Stream, 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 The Morning Stream.
This is The Morning Stream. Behave yourselves.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to The Morning Stream. It is TMS for Tuesday, the October 13th of the 2015. I'm Scott Johnson. That's Brian Ibbett.
Hello, Scott Johnson.
Hi, Brian Ibbett. How's it going?
Good.
Look, I found out before the read that, just before the read, I got a text from Bill Duran that he is sick, and you made my day by referring to it as Sickness Geek. That was
Sickness
fantastic.
Sickness Geek,
yeah,
sure.
It's really well done. Yeah, he's sick. He's got this thing that we all that you had, then I had, and my wife had, and by the way, she's fine now. And
oh, good.
Kids all seem to be okay. For some reason, they didn't get it at all. I don't know what's up with that, but yeah, whatever that thing is, everyone I know has been touched. Their lives have been touched by it.
Wow.
And, continues to move west, I suppose.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It is the Dragon Cloud moving, or Dragon Con Cloud, like moving west.
Seems like that was when we first heard of it. That was Ground Zero. Mm-hmm. Somebody in a stinky Chewbacca costume was incubating it, and they did. Little did we know that thing was full of whatever. And you walked past him, and it passed to you. And
wow!
And here it is.
You
and,
might be onto something, yeah, man.
I'm telling you, if you're going to incubate bacterial or viral infections, what better place to do it than some stinky, ratty, shitty cosplay?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right?
That's
right.
Where it's going to happen. You got weird plastic and fake fur in there, and you're not wearing your undies because you're weird.
Lots of hugging and yep. Handshaking.
Oh, yeah. And you're pitting out because you're in freaking Atlanta, Georgia.
At least the alcohol, though. There's so much alcohol that probably, you think that would kill the viruses.
Mm, you'd think so, wouldn't you?
You'd think.
Yeah. Not enough of it, I guess. Anyway, we're here, and we hope all Canadians had a fantastic Thanksgiving yesterday.
Yeah, hope it was good, eh?
Yeah. Somebody told a joke. I was at, let me tell you the story. So I was at a Thanksgiving celebration for Canadians yesterday. Turns out, Brian, it's basically just American Thanksgiving. Food was identical. It really wasn't anything special. There was no Kraft dinner, or nobody called me buddy or guy.
Hey, guy.
Hey, guy. What's going on, buddy? Hey, guy.
C-D-E-F guy.
But somebody did tell, or two of the gentlemen there broke into a beautiful rendition of the Canadian national anthem.
Oh, nice.
That was really cool.
Nice. Did somebody drop a puck at the end of it?
Nobody dropped a puck. However, they did describe to me a Canadian street fight. And, That would have been even better. But instead, it was just a conversation. It was just them talking. Like, okay. That's as bad as it got. It was pretty funny. So we had a few moments like that. But for the most part, it's like turkey, stuffing, gravy, like full-on American.
Typical.
The stuff we usually do here. So I'm not complaining. It was fantastic. The food was amazing.
Listen, Thanksgiving dinner is one of the things that America does right.
Mm-hmm.
So let it travel far and wide through our neighboring countries.
I agree. Also, the my wife, I think, brought these, but I'd never had them before. Have you ever had pickled? Oh, we should test these on the show. Pickled string beans. Is that a thing you've ever tried or had?
Pickled string beans.
Yeah. So they look like the full-on bean pods.
Sure.
Or no, I guess
they're
pea pods, actually. Well, now I'm not sure. I better check that.
Okay.
But they're big, long. They have points on each end, so that makes me think they're...
That's a green bean, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's a green bean.
Well, I guess a lot of bean pods have points on the end.
Right, but it definitely had the little beans inside, but they weren't like full-on pea pod size. I don't know what they were, but they're pickled, and I couldn't stop eating those damn things.
I bet, yeah, that sounds great.
They're fantastic. Pickled carrots, too.
Like pickled asparagus is a favorite of mine.
Yeah, Brian, pickle everything, as far as I'm concerned.
Honestly. That's where you go. See, there's the problem.
Yeah.
This is good. We must do this with everything. I must consume all of the cheeseburger goldfish.
I almost polished that off yesterday too. I really got to stop. I've got to stop. I get that you just described my problem. I can't stop once something's good. It's hard for me to end it.
If one is good and two is good and three is good, all of them at once must be good.
It's you can see where the psychological break happens. It makes sense. Anyway, yet somehow I'm able to maintain my new weight. I haven't gained any weight, so that's good.
In your family household growing up,
yeah,
was there like all of you and your siblings, your adopted and biological siblings, all ate together, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of the time we had dinner.
Was there like fights for who gets the last bacon or egg roll or whatever?
Yes. Although I like that you assume there were egg rolls.
I'm just thinking like, you know, that's the thing that when we get Chinese food, we're always fighting over the last crab wonton or the last egg roll.
Right. It just had special meaning to me since most of my siblings are Korean. But no.
Was there a fight over the last kimchi, Scott?
We did have some of that because we had, growing up, there was five of us, six in total, but my brother had long moved out. He's 10 years my senior, so he was gone for a long time. So. But everybody else, yeah, we would wrestle for... You know, especially during leaner times, there was a time where things were a little bit tight. And, you know, if there was an extra pizza roll hanging out. Mm-hmm. And I want to make one thing clear. I'm pretty convinced that the one gut issue I deal with now as an adult, I think is directly connected to the kind of crap my mom bought at the store. Like her, and she still does this when we go to her house. And it's great food. She's an amazing cook. She makes these amazing things, but it's always the creamiest, crispiest, you know. It's comfort food 101, but she never made anything that looked green to me or had like a ton of fruit. It was always just like, here's the creamiest, most fried looking, tastiest thing you ever saw in your life. And that's just kind of what we ate. And we all had metabolisms that meant that none of us were fat. We all ate like crazy and didn't gain a pound. And so because of that, it was just constant garbage food my entire young life. So, you know, it wouldn't be, when I use the pizza roll example, I'm not exaggerating.
Right. Oh, yeah.
We would fight over a pizza roll.
It was neither pizza nor roll.
No, it was more like a, what are those?
They're like lava nuggets.
Lava nuggets. Oh, dude, you have to wait, don't you? You have to wait and let those cool down.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Right out of the oven, that thing, as soon as you like, oh, yeah, the outside totally, I can totally, totally warm to touch, but it's not so hot, I can't pick it up. Great. Bite.
Oh, it's so bad. I forgot that. And you'd always have this burnt upper mouth thing, and your tongue would take 2 weeks to heal, and yeah, you don't want that in your life.
It's bad.
Anyway, so that was really good last night, and I just wanted to do a little shout out to the Thanksgiving Canadians.
Oh, by the way, the reason I was going with that whole... you know, fighting for food when you were young. I wonder if that's why you feel like you need to consume the whole bag of Oreos is because, oh, if I set these back down, my siblings are going to eat it.
I don't know. I'm sure other people can commiserate with this. And thankfully, sure. I still maintain a relatively good metabolism in that I don't blimp out when I eat
bad.
Yeah,
of course.
But I, you know, I can gain weight past where I want to be, and you know, it's not healthy anyway. But still, these it's like a voice in my head, Brian, that says, "There are a ton of these. You must have more of them.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stop there. Like there is something in me that says that, and it's of a problem.
Because as an only child, it's like, yeah, there's always going to be that. I don't have to eat that right away because, and it's going to be there. That bag, that 90% full bag of cheeseburger goldfish." That's in arm's reach. That'll still be there.
This is a really good point.
12 hours?
I think you're on to something now that you say all this. Because, yeah, especially my brother, he was eating everything and he was like a vacuum.
Oh, see, yeah.
He'd just walk in and go, and it would all just flow to him.
He would just open his mouth and it would be like a black hole, not even light.
And he does it now.
Pizza rolls would escape.
Like, we'll go to a family get together, he'll go through like a buffet line or something, and he'll come back with the biggest pile up you've ever seen. And do it twice. Mm-hmm. And I'll look at it. He's my older brother, but he's little tiny Korean man, Matt. Mm-hmm. And I know Matt's a weird name for a Korean. But anyway, his real name was Lee Sung-soo. And we got rid of that and named him Matt. Anyway, he gets these giant piles of plates, and I'll tell you, I'm not going to lie, I hear a little voice inside me that says, I could do that. I could get like that much. How come
you might have been even competition kind of thing.
Maybe. That might be it.
Wow.
Who needs Wendy? We just will.
This ends Therapy Tuesday.
Therapy Tuesday. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week. All right. I have an important announcement to make, two of them. One, we need to clear some shelf space before this Kickstarter loot starts arriving for the books. We are getting dangerously close to shipping stuff. I can't give anyone dates or anything, but I'm super stoked about it. People have been doing the survey yesterday. Thank you, everyone who did
that. Filled out my backer kit.
I saw yours. My Twitter account is nothing but backer kit replies.
I'm sure.
That's fine. I'm thrilled to see it all there. It's great. But I would check Twitter and then 15 minutes check it again. It's like 200 new replies. I'm like, what is going on Twitter? And it was, these. Anyway, so to clear space, literally clear physical space, for the Kickstarter loot for the MyExtraLife.com Definitive Edition book, we are having a big sale in the store. That's swag bags from previous Nerdtaculars, holiday cards, prints, all that stuff, everything. Here's what we want you guys to do. Use the code NEEDROOM, all one word. NEEDROOM, NEEDROOM. NEEDROOM and get 50% off anything in the clearance section of the website. So you have to go to the clearance area. Half off.
That's really good, man.
Yeah. And that's how desperate we are for space, because seriously, things are about to get crazy. So find the whole thing at, we made a short URL just to help you out if you want to get directly there, or you can navigate there through the normal store link on frogpants.com. But here it is, tiny.cc/myextraclearance. That's my extra clearance. The code is NEEDROOM. You can tell Dave had fun with codes today a little bit.
Yes. I think he's great with the codes.
I do too. It cracks me up. He likes to find fun in normally very boring places, so
yes,
I admire that. So anyway, there you go. NEEDROOM, 50% off anything in the clearance section, frogpants.com/store, or just go to tiny.cc/myextraclearance. And then finally, Brian, an announcement of seismic proportions.
Yes, this was big. This was a huge, mind-blowing announcement.
It's true, and it's been a while of communication with the team about it, trying to decide best thing to do. The decision was reached over the weekend, and so I put a blog post up yesterday that there will be no Nerdtacular 2016 for lots of reasons that I detail in a Nerdtacular.com post, the latest post there in the blog. It tells you everything you need to know as to why there won't be one, what's next after that. The NX, I'm calling it, or Nerdtacular 10, which is the 10-year anniversary and 10th Nerdtacular, will be the very following year. Mm-hmm. So 2017, we will have Nerdtacular 2017 or NX or some other name. I like the X because it's 10. Yeah. You got to do something.
Yeah. For sure.
That marks the 10-year anniversary. We started in 2007. We'll have the 10th in 2017. We're going to go crazy with it. We're going to make it huge. We're going to take that extra time to make something extra special. But moreover, there's a bunch of projects that I'm doing this year, this coming year, that just require so much focus and time that a Nerdtacular was just going to break it. And
I mean, basically, you know, you're holding off on one of the great things that you deliver every year so that you can deliver other great things next year.
I like your positive spin on that. I like that.
It's basically, hey, I know there isn't this, but look at all this.
Yeah. And so here's the other nice little bonus part, or the part that I haven't mentioned. So none of this is all, by the way, this is all motivated by positive momentum. None of this is like, oh, I just can't do another one. It's not like that.
It
is literally like, I could definitely use the break to get these other projects out. Again, I detail what those projects are on the site, so you can go find out, read all about that. But also, I don't think it's going to hurt to give the rest of my team a break, or not even a break, but a chance to think about what the big one's going to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People like you, people like others who at the show have huge roles in like big parts of it, and it takes a ton of work and planning. Give you guys a little bit of a breather, let you think about what Nerdtacular 10 could be. That kind of thing. And to me, it made perfect sense. And it was still not an easy decision, just because I know a lot of people, you know, there's always a bunch that go, this is the year I was going to go. And I'm like,
right.
Well, make it 2017.
Yeah. Now you have an extra year to save up, an extra year to plan.
Yeah. We may have more capacity. I mean, there's a chance to do a lot of really cool things. And it's the first time in 10 years that we've taken any sort of break from it. So,
right.
So that's what we're going to do. again,
I won't say that I'm bummed about the prospect of not having to scramble the entire month of, you know, June and July or May and June, depending on when in July it is, to have to put together all the stuff that makes up a Frog Pants All-Stars trivia thing.
It's a ton of work, and everybody puts in so much of their time. And
Michael and Corinne and you and Kim.
It's crazy. And then Tom and everybody come out here and they just give of themselves, and it's great. And they want to do it. It's like nobody doesn't want to do it.
Of course. Yeah.
But go read the details. You'll get a feel for what's happening. It's at nerdtacular.com, and it's just right there in the blog. What was the other thing I was going to say? Oh, I am renting a movie theater, kind of old school, Nerdtacular style, just for funsies, in June for the Warcraft movie. And that'll, I'm guessing, primarily be a bunch of locals, but I'm not turning anyone away. So if people are coming to that, they're welcome to. And it's all going to be on me. Likely, there'll be some sponsors to help out. But for the most part, we're not going to do tickets for that. We may have to do reservations for it. But people can come see the Warcraft movie on the Saturday morning weekend it comes out. So
I will absolutely be there for that.
And think about this, Brian. And Tom has already said he wants to come, and I think there's others. So it's kind of mini Nerdtacular anyway, without all the pressure and the hype and the 2 days and the planning and everything. But it's also, and it's just a nice throwback to what I used to do, you know, for this thing years ago, which is just kind of a fun little break. But also, it's just it's the Warcraft movie. I have to do this.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
I have to do this. So, and then you can just come and enjoy yourself.
Exactly. I don't need to write anything. I don't need to prepare anything. I don't need to, you know.
None of that.
I just show up, and I'm one of the Yahoos sitting in the office enjoying, eating popcorn.
That's right. We can go to get dinner and chill and CP. So we still have this cool opportunity. So the bottom line is, go read it. Nerdtacular.com. It's just worth it. I mean, I wrote it all. It's not worth me saying again. And go, you know, it's good for people to read sometimes. So go read about what I'm
doing. You know what? It's funny because this great community that you have fostered, you've created and helped foster and maintain and grow. A lot of people are talking about just doing little get-togethers locally. Like, all right, yeah, we're not going to meet at Nerdtacular, but I still would like to see some of the people that I usually go there with. So a bunch of Colorado people get together, a bunch of Tennessee people get together, whatever, I think that's super cool.
Tennessee people. I like those.
Gee, Tennessee people.
We're gonna call Daryl Skeels now.
He's a Washington person.
He is a Washington person. He likes it up there.
I saw a band from Seattle the other night. Actually, I didn't even mention that I went to a concert.
Oh, who was it?
On Sunday night, it was a group called FFS, but they are a super group made up of Franz Ferdinand and Sparks.
Oh.
Hence the FFS.
Right.
And I'll talk about it more later, but it was one of the weirdest things to have a concert where you've basically got two lead singers sharing the front of the stage, not like a front man. It's like a pair of them who are kind of like elbowing each other out of the way kind of thing.
Well, were they being harmonic with one another? Or were
sure.
So it wasn't like they were like doing a rap battle or something where they...
No. But it was, it's funny because they did individual band songs, like they did some Sparks songs, they did some Franz Ferdinand songs, but there's an album that just came out this year that is a collaboration between the two of them. And so it was written with them in mind, doing harmony, doing back and forth vocals, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, that sounds really awesome. Cool. All right. Well, music then leads to this. It is Stump a Trek Nerd, and it is brought to you by
Stuffing in October.
Yeah, I can't beat that, man.
No.
And the stuff this lady made was, oh my gosh, it was so good. I don't even know. I don't know what her recipe is, but I got to get my hands on it. And here's something I'm just going to say for the record:
red water salt.
red water salt. I like stuffing so much, and I've never understood why it has been relegated primarily to Thanksgiving only. I never see it for the rest of the year. And I think that is a crime. Like, what are we doing? What kind of humanity are we living in where we can't have stuffing anytime we freaking want it?
But I mean, is it the fact that we don't have it that often that makes it that much more special? Or if we had it all the time, would it just be like, mashed potatoes?
Damn you and your logic. You're probably right. Absence makes the heart fonder, right?
Right, exactly.
Nerdtacular 2017, everybody. Daryl, you there?
Oh, yes. I hope I am.
Oh, yeah. You sound great today. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you sound like you're within range of whatever antenna needs to point at you. That's fantastic.
Yes, whatever configuration, however you're standing, don't move.
Yeah.
Same as yesterday.
So are you standing? Describe it. Tell us your physical stature right now. What are you doing?
Well, my phone's just laying on my desk and I'm plugged in and I don't know.
Oh, you sound far.
Same as when it's a terrible connection.
You sound sort of far from it. Are you far from it?
Oh, is it that thing again?
Oh, there you are. Now you're
up now.
Now you're close to it. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's better. Well, anyway, let's get to the point of this, which is you're the Trek nerd. Yesterday you failed miserably on the show, so today is your big chance, man. This is your chance to show the world just how much Star Trek knowledge you have. It is Daryl the Trek nerd, and his question is this. What episode of The Next Generation does this clip come from? Here you go.
But what would I say?
Words come later. It is the scent that first speaks of love.
Thanks, Worf. That helps a lot.
No, it doesn't. That's freaking gross.
No, is that all you get? Wow.
That's all you get. Your options are Galaxy's Child. Boy, they were great in the 80s or the 90s.
Galaxy's Child.
B, Transfigurations. C, Aquiel. Thank you.
Aquiel, yeah.
Aquiel. What the hell's wrong with me? And D, Booby Trap. Booby Trap.
Booby Trap.
So you got Galaxy's Child, Transfigurations, Aquiel, or Booby Trap. There you go. Those boobs are without honor.
Boobies are without honor.
You know what? That'd be a great t-shirt with an angry war face on it. Boobies are without honor. I would buy that. All right. So, Daryl, them's your options. Think about them real hard. Oh, we don't have food.
We don't have anything to eat. Yeah. I could eat some goldfish. How about you, Scott?
I have no goldfish left. I have some Tums tropical fruit.
Mmm, delish.
These aren't even mine. So instead of that, Daryl's going to...
Biscotti in my coffee.
Oh.
By the way.
Yeah, yeah.
When they came up with biscotti, is it because they really screwed up a batch of cookies and they said, ooh, yeah, these are horrible. Oh, I bet if we dunked them in coffee, they'd be okay.
Well, that's interesting.
Because if you try and eat a biscotti normally, it is horrendous.
Well, let's see. Biscotti origins. Let's find this here. Biscotti Origins sounds like a bad video game.
It does.
Biscotti Wikipedia. Here we go. It is biscotti. Says the in English it is translated as, and that's Italian by the way, the translation is twice cooked. It's also known as cattuccini, and let's see, they're Italian almond biscuits originated in the city of Prato. They are twice baked, oblong shaped, dry, crunchy, and dipped in drink. Traditionally Vin Santo. The drink, meaning.
Wow.
History. Here we go. First documented recipe for biscotti is centuries-old manuscript, now preserved in Prato, found in the 18th century by the scholar Armando Bellenzia.
I was hoping his last name was going to be Biscotti.
Oh, that would have been great. Bis J. Scotti. The biscuits are called Genoa in that document, and then it spread from there, and now everyone loves it, so...
Here we go.
I think they're gross. I don't like them at all. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, only good when you dip them in coffee. Yeah. I've got the Trader Joe's. And really, they don't even call them biscotti. They call them chocolate chip cookie dunkers.
Oh,
they're basically the same. They're exactly the same thing as biscotti.
But they have chocolate in them?
Yeah, they're like little chocolate chips. As opposed to like regular biscotti is like the long biscuit with one side of it has a chocolate.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just basically poorly made, twice baked chocolate chip cookies.
It's like sweet Melba toast.
Right.
I don't like them.
It's not good.
No, Daryl. Do you guys remember on airplanes they used to give you Melba toast if you wanted it? Do you guys remember that?
Not on any plane I was ever on.
Well, when I was younger, I feel like in the very late 80s, early 90s, I feel like you could get that. I feel like I took a flight somewhere.
Can I have the kosher meal, please?
I'm pretty sure somebody gave me like black or, you know, dark brown slices. And it was in like a little baggie. You have to tear it open. Hmm. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, that's not good stuff.
It reminded me of that. Daryl, do you have one of these today in Star Trek history?
Why, yes, I do. Great. Back on this day in 1967. The TOS episode, The Apple, starring Marple, aired.
Oh, The first true red shirt.
Well, maybe not the first, but one of the best.
Easily one of the best, right?
Yeah.
Fantastic. How would you celebrate such an event? Do we all just go kill ourselves? Or
we'll beat ourselves over the head with a stick.
Yeah, that's nice. A great idea. Nice. What? Trilly ads. Oh, sorry. Jeannie's talking to someone, telling them I'm an expert on food. Boy, that's a good one. That's a funny joke.
Mr. Creamy Peen himself.
Oh, that reminds me, Brian, day two or three of No Tina.
So far, everybody's still happy and healthy.
Okay, good. There's not like it isn't just you laying on a giant pee stained mattress in the yard yet. We're fine.
It is not. Okay. That is correct.
All right,
is
good.
Not.
All right. Well, give us a few more days, everyone.
Things will change. Yes.
Daryl, back to your question. The episode. Oh, you know what? I brought this along for you guys just because I forgot this existed here.
Let's test the ship's phasers.
Remember that?
Love that.
I really missed them. I watched that video again. It was a riot.
Let's test the ship's phasers.
And no offense to the guy's mom who listens to the show, but she is the greatest person.
She is, yes. Oh, yeah,
freaking
for sure.
Love her. All right, Daryl. Did Daryl ever see this? I don't think he's ever seen it. Or did we show you this? Maybe we didn't. Well, it's that Star Trek Adventure thing in Disneyland or World.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
But have you seen this one with this lady?
Let's test the ship's phasers.
Because if you haven't seen that one.
Yeah, I did. That was funny.
There's a whole bunch of them. And they're so earnest and so, like, you can tell that she's just like, oh, my kids love this, so I'm going to be all into
this.
Exactly,
yep. I mean, everybody likes shaking like her.
Yeah, she's mom of the year as far as I'm concerned. Let's play it one more time so we never forget.
Let's test the ship's phasers.
All right, anyway. all right, Daryl, back to the thing. Which episode do you think that clip came from? Worf advice about smells and love.
Oh, let's see. Galaxy's Child, is that what it was?
Yeah, Galaxy's Child.
It's not that.
Well, I'm not saying that's the answer, but Galaxy's Child.
That's the first one.
Yeah, that's the first one.
Transfigurations. It's not... I don't think it's that.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's not Aquiel, because that's the episode we're doing this week for This Week in Trek.
Have you already watched it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's why.
It's not that one. Unless I'm forgetting something. So I would think that's Booby Trap.
I just like to hear you say Booby Trap.
I would hate to get stuck in one of those.
Well, I would love to get stuck in one of those.
Yeah, Brian's not going to lie. That'd be all right.
That'd be all right. Hey.
Let's find out if that's correct, if your presumption about that answer is right. And we'll find out now from the judges.
Oh, no.
Incorrect. Second day wrong. Amazing. We haven't had this in a while. The answer is Transfigurations. Geordi and Worf are sitting at the bar in 10 Forward, and they are talking about a woman that Geordi is interested in, as is often the case.
Yeah, exactly.
Poor Geordi. Did he ever find love? Do we know? Do we know if he ever did?
That's a good question.
Oh, he probably did.
He's never in any of the movies, right? There's never like a Geordi's now married kind of thing.
No, you know, it was always like Picard got married to Crusher, then later divorced or something.
Mm-hmm. Worf and Troy.
And
Riker for a while.
Yeah, then Riker for a while. We don't know if Riker ended up with anybody either in the long run. But then Geordi, all Geordi I think got was a sweet pair of contacts. That was it. He just didn't have to wear
that
hair clip anymore.
That he was Mr. Too Geeky for Girls thing. He's too cool for that.
I agree. I mean, the thing is, when they would portray it was never him. He would just be like, is the music okay? Do you want me to get you another drink? Like, he's just being nice. And the girl's just always, you know, Geordi, this just isn't working out. It was always on the girl.
Yeah.
Psh. Maybe he should have had contacts then instead of a hair clip on his face. Maybe that would have helped. Yeah, what are they saying? You know what they're saying in Star Trek? They're saying the guy with the nerdiest glasses is getting the worst action. That's what they're saying. Is that the lesson we're to take away from Star Trek, Geordi LaForge? If you have glasses, you're too big of a nerd to get the girl. Is that what you're saying? All right. Daryl is the Trek Nerd. You find him on the This Week in Trek, thisweekintrek.com as well. The Trek Nerd on Twitter. And the Grumpy Cast. Daryl, play a game with us now, please.
Oh, let's see. I am not prepared. How about this?
You are not prepared.
Trek or comics?
Trek or comics.
Trek or comics. Here's your theme. Let's see. Here you go.
I'd eat all the dirt in this yard for you.
All right.
And I actually don't know the answer because I left it blank, so I'm going to have to look it up while you think.
Okay.
M'Baku. That's M apostrophe Baku.
M'Baku.
M'Baku.
Comics or Star Trek?
And Scott's going to hang up with you right before you can give the answer.
Yeah, I screwed that up. That was just totally Nintendo finger. I literally twitched on my button. I shouldn't have been hovering over the hang up.
M'Baku.
I don't know. That sounds like both again. M'Baku. This is M'Baku, the ambassador of Planet Zebulon 2.
It feels like Star Trek. I feel like I remember it from Star Trek. I know I've heard that before. Yeah. M'Baku.
And it could be any series, right? You're not locking it into just TNG or TOS. Okay. Yeah, I agree. I think it sounds Star Trek. We think it's Ambassador M'Baku from the Pleasure Planet. Rise
okay, listen to this then.
All right.
M'Baku became a renegade and gains his powers by bathing in white gorilla blood and while eating white gorilla flesh, taking the alias of Ape Man. He's a, what is it, Marvel.
Marvel character?
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, what's white gorilla blood?
I don't know.
I know this character too. He's like, he's huge and that's M'Baku. M'Baku is the secret identity of...
he's a villain then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I'm really concerned about
Wakandan,
the white
gorilla. It's a Wakandan thing, if I remember correctly.
But are there white gorillas? Like white fur?
Sure. Sure.
There are?
Yeah.
I didn't know. I didn't know any of this. I feel like I've seen enough nature programming to know if there was a white gorilla. I've never heard of this until today. I was just saying, hey, chat room, dig up some pictures of white gorillas. My gosh, that's news to me.
Television highlights of the news of yesteryear.
I didn't even mean that. Today's news brought to you by
3D printing addicts everywhere, slowly watching things get made day after day.
So excited for you. I don't know why I'm excited for it. I just am.
I'll have to take a picture. This thing apparently is just going to be massive.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I still have no idea exactly where I'm going to put it, but.
Is it, if you're putting it in the other room and you do it remote, would you. Are you still in a position where you'd have to get some sort of new furniture for it or some kind of unique furniture for it? Or what do you think?
Depends on what kind of, there's some stuff that I could box up that's just like little tchotchke things that that I could probably put on a shelf or put in a closet somewhere.
Mm. I love that term, tchotchke.
Tchotchkes, yes. Gotta love the tchotchkes.
Yeah, except my brother, Matt, Chotch is short for Chaji. Which is penis in
right.
Korean.
Joni loves Chaji.
Yeah, so he'd call me a chotch all the time. You're such a chotch, he'd say.
Nice.
He wasn't wrong. Nice. Paramount Pictures did a really nice thing the other day. They put a crap ton of goodness up on YouTube. Basically, they've opened their film vault, which includes very old, somewhat new, and lots of in-between movies from their catalog or their library.
Yeah.
Just up on YouTube for free. And I watched an entire film that I'd never seen that I really wanted to see yesterday or last night. Finished it last night, started the night before. And it's going to be my recommendal this week, tomorrow. So I won't tell you what the title was, but I really enjoyed it. And I just realized how much cool stuff there is in there for Film Sack and stuff.
Very cool. Yeah, I can't wait to look through the list. I'm looking at them right now. King Solomon's Mines. I guess, as people now have devices that that can just throw YouTube up on their TV, it becomes viable to start saying, all right, yeah, YouTube is can be more than just a way to watch fail videos and cats.
Right. And they don't, it's already been true that you can go rent movies there and all that, but people don't think of that first. Like, that's not their first place to go watch a movie on TV.
Right.
But I think if studios do this more, there's real potential there. I'm actually surprised there aren't more people subscribing to it, but maybe they just heard about it. There's almost 200,000 people. I guess that's a pretty good number. But anyway, there is some weird old stuff like King Solomon's Mines, like you mentioned. Oh,
I know. That's perfect for Film Sack. Rumpelstiltskin.
Mm-hmm. And that one is the second most viewed video so far is King Solomon's Mine.
Mm.
Queer Duck the movie? What the hell is that?
That's the most?
No. The most one is The World of Susie Wong. I don't know what that is. There's some garbage in here too, I'm sure. Like Matthew Perry and Barbara Hurley and Elizabeth Hurley, in Serving Sarah. I don't know what that was.
I don't even remember what that was. I remember the name.
Like what is
Serving Sarah Silverman?
What is Shanks?
I don't know. I'm even trying to figure it out based on that. Based on that movie poster.
That movie poster is special, dude. It is special. I got to do a tweet about that. What else on this one? They got Dark City, but not the one you're thinking of.
This might be FilmSack. A revenge-driven puppeteer applies his talent to humans in this supernatural horror film.
I'm in. I'm entirely in. That sounds fantastic to me. Chop Shop. Oh, they have some digital stuff. Anyway, it looks kind of like just them doing a cool thing. Like this is
starring Marcel Marceau.
Really?
Yes.
Holy crap. Here, I'm just going to jump somewhere randomly in it and we'll see what we see here.
Okay.
Oh, weird. Okay, that's very visual. Let's go. Well, he never says anything.
Barton, come in here.
Oh, really? Does he keeps his whole,
Watch out for that car.
Watch out for that car and that baguette.
We gotta think seriously about it, because that's something everyone will have access to. We could totally slip some of those into FilmSack, so we'll think about it.
I'm in.
Here's a dubious study of the day.
Okay.
So, you know, take this for what it's worth, but people who order black coffee are more likely to be psychopaths.
Yeah, that sounds viable.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Just in time for Halloween, a new study published by the journal Appetite, revealed that people who like their coffee black are most likely to possess antisocial and psychopathic personality traits. Okay, let's see what this says.
Yeah.
The research, which comes from the University of Innsbruck in Austria, we have examined the taste preferences of 1,000 people.
Please fill out this survey. Are you a psychopath?
Oh, yes?
How do you like your coffee?
I like it black. Ah, we have found the connection. let's see. Finding those who preferred more bitter notes in foods like black coffee scored higher in a series of personality questionnaires and assessed Machiavellianism, a term used in psychology to describe personalities that are dark, psychopathic, narcissistic, or sadistic, and sadistic, that is. Or maybe they're just lactose intolerant. Who knows? But anyway, the study also notes that participants who reported a fondness for other bitter foods like radishes, celery, tonic water were also more likely to exhibit psychopathic traits. The study was small and the data self-reported, a notoriously unreliable metric. So take from all of this what you will.
Hamsters are psychopaths. They like celery and radishes.
Yeah, what's up with that? We've got to stop these animals before it's too late.
Oh, my God.
I wonder, okay, could you go back and say, before incarceration or while he's in prison, Charles Manson likes his coffee black. Ted Bundy sure liked a nice cup of black coffee before murdering people. Like, this is silly to me.
There's some silliness. Yes.
The Journal Appetite? Come on.
We had to come up with something. It's a very boring book. We had to be interesting.
It's a terrible Austrian accent.
That was perfect. Dead on.
Thanks. What else is happening? Oh, look at this. This is scary. So we're always worried about earthquakes in California or the Wasatch Fault here in Utah and various other faults around the country and in the world. Tsunamis and all the stuff that comes with it. But little did we know, we are creating giant seismic cracks in the moon.
We're causing it. We're making this happen.
It's our fault.
Okay.
Says scientists.
Uh-huh.
Cracks on the surface of the moon are being pulled open, and it's our fault, at least from our planet's point of view. It's our planet's fault as the Earth gravity pulls and tugs on our cosmic companion, according to astronomers. The Earth's gravitational field exerts a tidal force on the moon, just as the moon's gravity is responsible for the rise and fall of waters on the Earth's oceans and lakes, they explain. Which always weirded me out as a kid. When you told me the moon was responsible for, like, the tide.
Yeah, it's just right. Weird. Exactly. It's so cool.
So weird. You can't explain that. In fact, wasn't that the that was Bill O'Reilly's things that was his proof of a higher being was that the tide comes in, tide comes out. You can't explain that. Remember that?
You can't explain that with science.
Yeah, literally, you can. Bill.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what you can explain it with, Bill.
Should have done it live. says
what
we know.
What does that mean? Play me out. Sting. What?
And that's it for us. We'll see you next week with something with Sting. F it! We know the close relationship between the Earth and the Moon goes back to their origins, but what a surprise it was to find the Earth is still helping shape the Moon, says study lead author Thomas Waters, a planetary scientist at the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. So basically, our gravitational pull is yanking that thing around until it gets cracks in it. Here's the other thing that blew my mind, Brian. This is the part this completely boggled me. Mm-hmm. Somebody did an actual 3D model based on a scan of the Earth from space and then just removed all the water. So took all the oceans out.
Okay. Yeah.
It looks like a big misshapen bean.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's not round anymore. Like, it's a big, weird, misshapen, like, oblong-looking turd. Yeah.
I think it would still be round. It would just have, like...
I gotta find this. Earth, no water. GIF. I saw an animated. Yeah, here it is. Oh, there's tons of them.
Throw a link in the business.
BuzzFeed. Is it animated though? I need to see the animated one. Okay, here we go. Okay, you got to scroll down a bit to get it. But chat room and Brian, here it is in the chat.
Okay.
I know it's not round in the first place. I understand that, but you just think of it as that. Right? You think of the Earth. It's not that I thought it was round, perfectly smooth ball. I never thought that.
Well, no. But it's...
But because the water is part of the deal, it's part of the package, you end up with, at least from a person's eyeballs, it looks like a brown ball. But if
No way! Yeah. Is that really... So number six there with that rotating thing.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
That can't...
That's it.
I question that. Really?
Yeah, and that's why when you put the water in there, it gives you the rest of the shape. But if all the water went away Mad Max style, right? Like mm-hmm. suddenly the ocean is a thing you drive on for days and then decide to turn around and go back and kill Immortan Joe, then you lose the shape. And that would probably have a very adverse effect on our trajectory around the sun and how we gravitationally do things.
Sure.
All that other stuff. So anyway,
it's funny. It looks like an asteroid. It feels like there's areas that if you were to put sea level on here, that there are areas that are continents that are part of continents that we know and love that would be below that. Like, I mean, you know, it's BuzzFeed. So,
well, look at the, so if you look at the image below it, which is from Google Earth or something. Mm-hmm. And then look at the one above it. It kind of makes sense because you've got parts of it. Like, look how deep it is on that
right,
one.
Right, like
indent.
The Marianas Trench there, and
yeah, it's like way down there.
Yeah,
but you take away all that water, and you're left with it with basically kind of a hard to pass turd.
I heard somewhere, and this is again probably something that can be found online, but if you took a cue ball mm-hmm. and you increased it to the size of the Earth, mm-hmm. There would be cracks and valleys that are way bigger than anything we have on Earth.
Oh wow!
Yeah, that it looks smooth, but when you make it that big, it's a very imperfect.
Well, here's a good example of that on Mars. There's Olympus Mons, which is the biggest peak on mm-hmm. Mars. Mm-hmm. That's 27 kilometers tall. That's three times the height of Everest.
Oh really? Wow!
So Mars looks nice and round, but if you really want to get down there.
Yeah, no kidding.
But just removing the water is, like, crazy.
Go check that out, Mark Watley.
Yeah, this is all very cool.
Cappy Kipper says it's a gravity map, so higher density areas will skew the shape.
Oh.
But,
All right.
But, who knows? I think...
Look, if I... here's my only question. If I fly really fast around it, will it put me back in time to save the giant chocolate bar in the sky from the whales?
Holy cow. You know, what the situation here might actually be is that the Krypton criminals are what broke the moon.
Oh, good.
Because remember when they were up there?
Mm-hmm.
They were throwing crap around.
Yeah, they were tossing. They were just like they were dolls. They were throwing astronauts all over the place and everything.
Right.
Oh, Phil Platt, a guy I very much respect and like, the bad astronomer he goes by. He says, no, that is not what the Earth would look like without water. So he has, let's see, some has places more dense and places are less dense. This affects surface gravity. So I'm just trying to read. Oh, that's interesting. All right, well, he claims, no, it doesn't look that way.
Okay.
So maybe that turd is wrong.
It's funny because it's not like we can't figure out what it would look like, right? I mean, there's, you know.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's
the
mad.
We can figure out the depth of.
That's Mad Max Earth, the one he shows on his article. Here, chat room, you can look at this one.
The one that says, here's what the Earth would really look like without water?
Yeah,
that
yeah,
one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that's a little bit more.
What's that what little I've water? What are the little water planets supposed to represent there? The big drop of water. Let's see. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, this is what the Earth looks like. That big drop is the water. So that's all the water.
That blows my mind that's the only amount of water really that's on the planet. Weird. That what's in that drop.
Weird.
Yeah.
And the tiny little dot of blue is just
fresh water.
Fresh water from lakes and rivers. The smaller one is ground lakes. Or fresh water in the ground lakes, swamps, and rivers. But that big one is the ocean water. Wow.
Right. That's insane.
That is crazy. Although imagine a giant water sphere floating above the Kansas over there.
Oh, yeah. The sun focusing its rays through that.
Everybody would take a poo.
Burning all the cornfields.
Wow. Dropping a big poo. All right. There's that. What else? So it's all science today, man. All good and fake science together. What's this? Oh, Steven Tyler. Let's get back to some celebrity idiot stuff.
Okay, good.
Steven Tyler has asked Donald Trump to quit using Dream On for campaign. He has demanded that Donald Trump no longer use Aerosmith's famous song, Dream On, Dream On. Why would you use that anyway?
Yeah, right. Well, because he's dreaming of what making America great again.
Yeah, but doesn't the phrase Dream On mean, yeah, dude, Dream On.
If you say it like that, dream on, man.
Yeah.
But the song is about, you know, dream until your dreams come true. It's, you know, it's endorsing dreams.
I don't know. It has an edge and a darkness to it that I think is weird to use. Don't you think? Like, that song's always been.
I think only because of how we've taken that phrase, you know, and saying, dream on.
I guess so.
I think that's what it's become.
Steven Tyler's lawyers, who also wear giant scarves, sent Trump a cease and desist letter on Saturday. According to The Hollywood Reporter, the outlet notes that this is the second time they've sent the letter to Trump about the song after sending an earlier request in August of this year. The letter says the song, quote, gives the false impression that Tyler is connected with or endorses Mr. Trump's presidential bid, which he does not. He doesn't actually say he wouldn't vote for Trump. He's just like, yeah, we're not endorsing anybody, so quit using our music. This happens every time.
It totally does. Every cycle, every presidential, every election cycle this happens.
Yeah.
And is there a way that we can make it easier? Like, is there like an equivalent to Spotify or, you know, where you could basically say, here's Michael Stipe, REM, saying, these are the candidates that I'd support, and you can use my music for that.
Like some kind of new addition to the Commons, Creative Commons clause.
Right, exactly. Like, I'll allow Rand Paul to use any of my songs.
I think it'd be funny if it was like they had to use, you know how they make fake versions of songs for TV shows and stuff? Just
right.
Sort of like on The Simpsons or Futurama, where it just sort of sounds like Eye of the Tiger.
Exactly. It's not quite. It's not the melody. It's not the lyrics, but yeah, it's what you think of when you hear that.
Or just some open source thing like, I'm Donald Trump and I'm running for president. And then something no one ever gets paid for, which is what this is.
Right.
Anyway, actually, I kind of like that.
Like the yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it was all right. Anyway, Steven Tyler in the news. Hey, look at this. Tweaked Audio sponsoring today's program with their 5 fantastic styles, 7 great colors. All of their earbuds and earbud accessories are designed to sound great with music and talk. Please doth check them out. They're engineered for durability, noise reduction, and compatibility. Just got a brand new phone? Hey, head on over to tweakedaudio.com and get some real earbuds for it. Tweakedaudio.com is the place. Use the code STREAM. And on us, you'll get 33% off. That's a third off the price using the code STREAM at checkout at tweakedaudio.com. When we come back, it's Star Wars trivia for Brian time. And then after that, jury duty.
Awesome. Can't wait.
Yeah, it'll be great. But Brian brought music. He's going to play it now, and there's not dirt shit you can do about it.
No, you're locked in now. Francesca wrote in, says, my brother is a massive fan of the show. He is my best friend. Recently, he's been having some trouble with his health, and hopefully, as I'm writing this, he hasn't had the confirmation of cancer he is about to have testing for. The 13th of October is his birthday, so could you please play a cover of a Bowling for Soup song, a band which we have seen together 5 times? Hopefully my big bro is okay, but if he isn't, then hopefully we're on the right track to get him better. Happy birthday, Steven, signed Francesca. Mm. I hope so, and I haven't heard any follow-up stuff, so I hope everything is going well. How about a song, because Bowling for Soup does a ton of covers. Not a lot of people cover Bowling for Soup, however... Bowling for Soup are known for a song that's actually not even originally by them. So how about I play the original version of a song that people always associate with Bowling for Soup because they did the most popular version. On the album Here We Go Again from 2004 by the band SR71, they included this song called 1985, which was later covered and turned into a big hit by Bowling for Soup. Here's the original version. It's SR71 and 1985.
Hit the wall, she never had it all. One Prozac a day, husband's a CPA. Her dreams went out the door when she turned 24. Only been with one man, what happened to her plans? She was gonna be an actress, she was gonna be a star. She was gonna shake that ass on the hood of White Snake's car. Now her SUV has become the enemy. Looks at her average life. Nothing has been alright since Bruce Springsteen, Madonna, way before Nirvana. There was U2 and Blondie, and music still on MTV. Her two kids in high school, they tell her that she's uncool, cause she's still preoccupied with 1985. At least 100 times. Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. She rocked out to Wham. Not a big Limp Bizkit fan. Never knew George was gay. Hope they'd hook up one day. Where's her fairy tale? Where's her dream? Where's the quarterback from her high school football team? Where's her fairy tale? Where's her dream? How many times will she ask her? What happened to me? Ask herself what happened.
The robber bro.
When Bruce Springsteen, Madonna, way before Nirvana, there was U2 and Blondie, and music still on MTV. Her two kids in high school, they tell her that she's uncool, cause she's still preoccupied with 1985.
The name of the game is Connect Four.
Gotcha! Four cross!
One more game.
Object, connect four of your checkers in a row while preventing your opponent from doing the same. But look out, your opponent can sneak up on you and win the game.
I won.
Where? I can't...
Here, diagonally.
Pretty sneaky, sis.
Connect Four, the vertical checkers game from Milton Bradley.
Hinga dinga dergan.
I am the Führer of the Beach. This is the Morning Stream.
Man, knowing that that's the original about 1985 in a retro way, and that it's a, now there's a cover that's more popular of the song about 1985 makes me feel old.
Right, right.
Wow. 85 was great, though, man. What a year.
It was a great year, yeah.
Back to the Future. I almost could drive then. It was a good
music
time.
Music still on MTV, as they say, yeah.
Yeah, that stuff's great. Anyway, here we are, everyone. That did sound like Weird Al. I'm going to agree with the chat room.
It totally did. Yeah, I said that, that you know, my uncle describes bands, all the bands that sound like that as, oh, yeah, it sounds like Weird Al Yankovic trying to sound like a band from the 2000s.
Yep, I completely agree. All right, we're going to do a little Star Wars trivia. I was going to prepare a theme and I forgot to, so there's no, I'll just play this.
He's what the old woman called a pube.
There you go. You're a pube. Brian
the
is,
old woman would call him a pube. That's from that, November 11, 2362.
No, that one's from the Dark Tower book.
Dark Tower,
four,
that's right. That's what everybody, yeah,
maybe three.
Stuff.
Yeah. For some reason, Stephen King is obsessed with the word pube in that series. And I never noticed it until now. All right, here's your questions, Brian. We're going to give you a hard trivia questions about Star Wars instead of having Chin Beard, the
sickness
geek. Sure. Mm-hmm. And these are not easy. This is more like trivia night for you where real, you know, real stuff is on the line.
Head scratchers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not going to be, Mandalorian is not going to be answered, going to be the answer to one of these.
Nope, much harder than that. So here's question number one.
All right.
You need to order these battles of the Star Wars universe, okay? So what order did these battles happen in?
All right.
Subjugation of Geonosis.
Okay.
Battle of Yavin. Occupation of Bespin. Liberation of Ryloth. Sith Civil War.
Wow. let's see here. Hold
this
on.
This is for nerds. So
there's five of them, right? All right, I'm writing them down here. Okay, well, the Battle of Yavin actually took place during the movies. That was episode four.
Okay.
The Liberation of Geonosis, was that what that is?
Mm-hmm.
That, did that take place in the prequels?
Subjugation of Geonosis.
Subjugation of Geonosis.
Mm-hmm.
Jiminy Christmas. All right, here's the order I'm going to say.
All right.
I'm going to say Sith Civil War.
Okay.
Sith Civil War,
okay.
Geonosis,
okay.
Yavin,
okay.
Bespin, okay. Ryloth.
All right, you are incorrect on all counts.
I'm sure.
Subjugation of Geonosis is the correct first one. I'm wrong. Sith Civil War is first.
Yeah, that's what I said first.
This
good.
This is pre Knights of the Old Republic. Liberation of Ryloth, number two.
Mm-hmm.
Subjugation of Geonosis, number three. Battle of Yavin, number four. And Occupation of Bespin, number five.
Really? So, okay. So,
you
basically,
like two
if you just
them.
Move Ryloth,
mm-hmm.
then I had them all right. I had Ryloth in the wrong place.
Correct. That would have shifted everything in your favor.
So, I know the books are not canon anymore. What about Knights of the Old Republic?
Knights of the Old Republic is still considered canon because
it's
ongoing. That game still exists, and the Old Republic MMO is still doing story bits that are supposed to be canon. So,
gotcha.
That's my understanding, unless someone has a different answer.
Right.
Question number two. This is very important. This very important Jedi that is key to the prequel series but never appears in it had the name changed by typo in the Attack of the Clone script because F and D keys are next to each other. Who is that character?
Oh, my God. Orf Mantell.
I'll give you a hint. He is the Jedi who ordered the creation of the clone army in secret.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who that was.
Anyway.
I'm gonna take it on this one.
Sifo-Dyas. SIFO-DYAS. It was supposed to be Sido Dias, or the mispronunciation of Sidious.
Oh, really?
Because,
okay.
Because, again, they were masquerading as Jedi and ordered the clones built when they shouldn't have. Question number three.
These are hard. These are hard. A couple people, Lau Roman in the chat room, nailed that one.
Oh, he knew that one? Wow. All right. Before Decipher Inc. lost the license to print Star Wars cards in in 2001, they released a card revealing we'd actually seen a scruffy-looking Nerf herder, a guy who herded Nerfs on screen. What was the name of that character?
Oh, my God. So, okay. So, let me see if I understand this. So, before they lost the trading card deal, they released a card that showed a character on that we saw in the movies who was a Nerf herder.
He was a Nerf herder, a herder of Nerfs. Mostly darts for the replacement darts for the guns, but yeah, he herded Nerfs.
And what was that character's name?
What was his name? And there's a photo of him. I'll give you, the only hints I'll give you that he's an African-American man, and he does appear briefly on screen in Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
Near Plo Jabba.
Kloon.
No, it is Rennick is his name. Rennick.
Rennick, okay.
All right, these are really hard.
They are really hard.
How about this one? The Empire Strikes Back primarily takes place in two sectors, the Sluia sector, Sluia sector, and includes the Dagobah system, and this sector that includes other planets in the film. So all other planets represented in Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
That is where you would find this.
Shoot, this I have, because I've seen the big map thing that shows where things are.
Mm-hmm. This one I actually knew. So this has both Hoth and Bespin, to give you a hint, in it. Located right. In it.
I can't remember.
It would be the Anoet sector.
The Anoet sector. Okay. Yeah.
Final question. You ready for this one?
Yes, I'm ready for the last question.
All right. I've never been more ready for the last question ever. we can't do that one. Let me give you another one.
Okay.
That one's too hard. Okay, here we go. Nope, that's no good either. That's not... These are really hard. Okay, here's this one. What lizard-skinned head of the Black Sun Criminal Syndicate was added to Star Wars canon in 96 and then removed in 2014.
Oh, really? Okay. Jeez.
Lizard skin head of the Black Sun Criminal. I don't mean his head was the only lizard skin part. He was the head of the criminal syndicate.
Gotcha. Lizard skinned head. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Leader is what they probably should have said.
Right. Was that, what was it? Dirge?
I'll give you a hint that he was leader of the Black Sun in the Shadows of the Empire novel, comic book, and video game.
Yeah, all I can remember is Dash Rendar from that. And he wasn't lizard skin, and he was the good guy you were playing as.
And I'll give you a hint. It's Prince something.
Oh, no. It was Zizor, Prince Zizor.
Oh, guys, what? Yeah. We got it. We did it.
Prince Zizor.
All right. Well, you're not taking home the check, but you're taking home my respect.
Yeah, so he's been added. So he's back in Ken. Oh, no, he's
out. No, he's
out. Again.
He got taken out in the purging in 2014. So he's out. Gotcha. Actually, all of that stuff, I think that game, everything about all that is done out. I know. It seems so arbitrary to me sometimes.
It does, because, I mean, that is a good way to explain what happened between Empire and Jedi, right?
Kind of frustrating. But then again, I get it. I understand why they're doing it. They needed to rein all that in and... Right. Clean up their mess a little bit, because there is stuff all over the damn place. All right. Well, good job, Brian.
All right. Well, glad I got one with a little bit of help.
I think it was all right.
These are their stories.
I'm terrible with names.
It's Justin and Robert Young on the line. Justin, hello.
Hi, friends. How are you?
Good. Where are you today? You sound like you're in a hotel or something.
I am.
Oh.
I'm in sunny Southern California.
What brings you there? I know you were at Disneyland yesterday, was it?
I was. Yeah. I had a go game on property.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So does that mean it has to be done by Disney? Or, I mean, like paid for by Disney? Or can any old schmuck have a go game on a Disney property?
I don't know what the threshold is for it. But the people that we did it for are connected to Disney.
Gotcha. Okay, I was going to say, do you have to run? You don't have to run and pick up all your stuff when you see the cast members coming?
No. We're not running in bootleg style. Although, like, I really don't know how much that would be an issue. Like, if we were to do, like, a party or something, you know, and they agreed to pay for us scouting it and everything, that, like, we could probably do it. Although, I'm sure that there's, like, some statute, you know, there's some, like... the block of gray text at the bottom of your ticket, it's like, Walt said, no scavenger hunts, you scamp.
And I like that they'd all talk to each other in 50s nomenclature, though.
Only the Council of Elders that, you know, have remained in stasis next to Walt's frozen head.
Yeah, of course. And you rode, when I was speaking to you, you were in line to get on the Indiana Jones ride.
So I have this weird relationship with the Indiana Jones ride because it was the only ride that they didn't have at Walt Disney World. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So growing up, as I have confirmed as an adult, you know, Disneyland is basically like a crappy first draft version of Walt Disney World in Orlando. And for every other reason. By the way, you want to piss off a Californian? Crap about Disneyland.
Yeah, that's one way to do it, for sure.
They do not care about anything, California people. They're just like, things that everybody else in the country cares about. Sports? I don't know, man. I mean, maybe you should think about more important things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in politics, like, even like they're very passionate, but it's like, you know, I just kind of want to vote my conscience. Talk some stuff about Disneyland, and people will throw hands.
The Pirates of the Caribbean ride at Disneyland feels like it's about twice as long as the one in Magic Kingdom in Florida.
It does. Yeah. It does. Yeah. I mean, and so there. Yes, it has.
So their first draft was, yeah, we need to make this shorter.
Yeah. Well, to kind of back that up, maybe they felt that it was too long, and then when they were working on World, they were like, well, now we have a chance to fix that long ass ride.
People are still gonna wait. I
don't want to get into this. I'm sure I've already pissed off people by being critical about The Martian. I don't need to start, you know, getting hate tweets because of Disneyland. I'm just saying, parting shot, and we can move on, that Disneyland sucks so much that Walt died making a replacement.
That's an interesting point. Is there any consensus as to how the international Disneylands, like the Tokyo one or the French one, or how
the Tokyo one apparently is amazing because Disney doesn't own it technically.
Really?
Or they own it, but they sold the rights. It's some weird deal where there's some other massive conglomerate. Yes. That actually like puts the money to it, but they bought this incredibly restrictive license from Disney. So like everything that gets done, Disney Imagineers need to work on and like basically give them the plans for, and then they put the money to it. However, they're not operating in the gigantic Disney umbrella corporation. It's just this one theme park that this one massive company owns. So they spend way more money on their things than Disney does. And so Imagineers love working on Tokyo Disney stuff because they can basically, like, there's no one that's going to say, I don't know, that might cost a little bit too much.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would have never guessed that.
Amazing. I mean, we went to Tokyo Disney when we were there this last summer and did the non-traditional, quote-unquote, traditional Disney half. We didn't do the half that had It's a Small World and Space Mountain and stuff. We went over to the Disney Sea side, which is kind of like almost all new stuff that we've never seen before.
Is it rides? Yeah. Is it rides where someone puts a scorpion in your pants and then you laugh? And
that's right. Yes. Yeah. Everybody, you know, you here's a ride where your eyes get massive and you go.
Oh, good. Pokey hair, and I can be like a kind of a dour hero to save the world and all that.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes.
Great.
Here's one where you are pushed out into a group of strangers in your underwear, and then somebody punches you in the face. It's a comedy.
That's fantastic. Well, Jerry, in your travels, anything on your mind? Anything?
So Indiana Jones. Yeah, I never got to go on Indiana Jones.
Oh yeah,
so, I went to Disneyland for the first time earlier in the year, and then I really didn't have a ton of time yesterday. But I'm like, if there's one thing that I am definitely doing, it is going on Indiana Jones, and it's not the best ride on the planet. I'm spite riding it because I was not able to ride it when I was a kid, and I was really angry about it. And yeah, so I don't know. And that's a weird thing about me.
Now, the one of the Indiana Jones ride in Japan is based on Crystal Skull. So already the one in California has got that head and shoulders above. Yeah.
Well, it's actually, as far as I've also, another kind of weird obsession of mine is plots on theme park rides.
Okay.
I really kind of love plots on theme park rides because there's all, as a genre, it's very weird. And sometimes it's a wink, wink meta thing. And you have to make these decisions on whether or not the people that are riding, are they customers? Are they, people who have snuck in to this place? They?
Oh, no, are people who were on a tour and they went down the wrong path kind of
exactly,
thing?
Exactly, yeah. But Indiana Jones makes this fun, the plot to it is actually really fun, where the idea is it's not amongst, it's not based on any of the movies, but it's this mysterious Indian temple that can give if you come toward the idol or come toward this ancient god, she will bless upon you earthly riches, but if you look her in the eyes, then you'll die. So Indiana Jones is famous in this universe, and he decides to go investigate it, but news breaking of him investigating it means that people from around the world are coming to claim the treasure. So you are ostensibly a tourist in this temple, and you have to be rescued by Indiana Jones. Spoiler alert: when things go sideways, but it ends with Indiana Jones saying, "Tourists, why did it have to be tourists?"
I've never caught that.
I really like it in that it is a fun and thing that you are supposed to be who you are.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things you miss. If you do the fast pass for the Indiana Jones ride, you bypass that whole middle section where you've got the movie, showing Sala talking about this whole thing and reading the newspaper article and the news reports. You bypass all that, and it's a bummer because you actually kind of lose that extra flavor of the ride.
No, it's I don't know. I guess I've just gone on so many Universal Studios and Disneyland rides that for whatever reason, that's just a thing that I really like is theme is.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Ride plots.
Oh no, Mr. Toad just picked you up in a taxi cab and he's gonna drive you like a maniac through the streets of London.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, what happened? Did Bill die and you guys decided to just slaughter Brian in trivia in public?
Yeah,
As
the show was starting, I got a text from him saying he was deathly ill and wasn't going to make the show. So I thought, well, got to scramble, got to come up with something. And I thought I had grabbed some.
That's almost humiliating trivia questions about Star Wars.
You
should have called that segment Order 66, the way dudes were getting slaughtered.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I was hoping it was a little bit more intermediate, but given the last minute nature of everything, I kind of grabbed what I could grab, and it didn't work out very well.
I just didn't know whether or not I missed this thing that had been built up, and it was like, oh no, noted Star Wars expert Brian Ibbitt will finally put his experience to the test.
Yeah, he'll finally line up the various obscure battles of the Star Wars universe in the correct order, for everyone
Although
to hear.
You definitely didn't do yourself any favor. I mean, in no Mandalorian questions, right? Yeah. And then three in, you're like, wait a minute, where's the Mandalorian?
Exactly. I was hoping for the man to like, can we have a question about what kind of armor Boba Fett wears?
Guys, we have some breaking news that I really want to get Justin's opinion on. So I'm going to bust in here with a little beep, 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 beep. This just in, and well, I guess it's been known for most of the morning, but I just heard about it. Playboy is abandoning naked women in their magazines.
Yes.
It says here, Playboy will no longer publish nude images of women. None of Playboy's efforts to adjust to the way that the net has changed the availability of porn were successful, though it fared better than Penthouse, which tried to out-hardcore the internet and failed. Despite falling circulation, 800,000 today versus 5.6 million in 1976. That is a big drop.
Yeah.
The magazine still has one of the world's most recognizable brands and logos. Playboy may be a victim of its own success, having led the vanguard to normalize sexualized nudity as part of the regular entertainment experience. They're going to relaunch in March without the nudity, though it will still feature PG-13 images of partially dressed women in provocative poses. It will feature a sex-positive women's sex columnist and continue to publish investigative stories and fiction. Let's see, some of the best short fiction.
So Maxim with better articles is what they're going with.
They're becoming Maxim for people with jobs is effectively what they right, want to do.
Yeah, but you know what this doesn't seem to recognize is the drop could also has not as I mean yes that's a part of this the reason for the drop but also just the publishing printing world in general. I assume the website has to be in parallel, right? They got to come up with
I think that's part of it, and I'm sure that there's also some behind the scenes elements of like as the circulation drops mm-hmm. and you can rely less and less on direct subscriptions, that you are more and more reliant on mass distribution channels. And there are probably just more opportunities for non-nudie magazines than there are for nudie magazines.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. I would, when I read that news, I kind of suspected that was part of it as well, that you're just going to see like them relaunching means that you're going to see Playboy at the rack when you're checking out at the
with a big cover on it or a big false front and
the brown paper wrapper.
So this is great,
which is kind of weird because like it might be the only way in its own odd way that you could make Playboy kind of dangerous again.
Yeah,
like right, like because now some dude could be like reading a Playboy next to you on a plane and you'd be like, oh, look at dude reading pornography next to me.
Bold move there, buddy.
Yeah. but really it's going to be as scandalous as somebody reading a Maxim.
Well,
I remember actually picking up a Maxim in an airport and feeling weird about reading that on a plane and there's no nudity.
Yeah, and like, you got this, it's like suddenly marijuana being legal everywhere. You'd still feel weird about popping out a joint and smoking it outside. Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of thing.
Well, number one,
you can't do that, actually.
You have not been to San Francisco.
Well,
that is a worry that the Bay Area certainly does not share with you.
Right, but I completely understand. But you know what I mean? Like where the stigma is the thickest, you're gonna that's gonna be crazy. And so, Playboy has universal stigma. It just does. And so to do that, it's going to be interesting. Now, I would assume that the PG-13 level scantily clad women will probably be more mainstream fare. You're going to see popular young actresses and folks who are not necessarily interested in objectifying themselves in full view, but would, you know, show up in a bikini or in a, you know.
I mean, I think that's probably part of it as well, is that like now you like Playboy has always sort of maintained the idea that it was, you know, tasteful nudity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, and so now if they don't have to be naked, you could certainly see, you know, I don't know who, just shows you how old I am, but, you know, like Scarlett
Who's
Johansson.
Who's popular these days?
Yeah.
You know, but like,
is there a Demi Lovato or something?
But yeah, I mean, like, yeah, the, you know, whomever, you know, like, is the young starlet of the day. Mm-hmm. You could certainly see her, you know, making that, you know, a thing, or that being a rite of passage, you know, in a way that, you know, Maxim, because now it's not as trashy as Maxim.
Yeah.
Like Playboy, even though when Playboy did naked people, was not looked at as trashy as Maxim.
Yeah.
Well, they were always perceived. I mean, the articles and the interviews were always perceived as being really good, and that barrier to entry was, well, yeah, but now I have to have a Playboy on my coffee table because I really like that interview with Dan Rather.
Also very notable for some of their fiction, like short fiction stuff is very, yeah, right. very mm-hmm. well received and respected. Some of it turned into big projects for people outside of that. So yeah, it's such a weird thing in the first place. One of my favorite things about this article is this quote from one of his chief executive people named Mr. Flanders. I don't know his first name.
It's got to be Ned.
I hope so. But he says this. He's talking about this whole thing and why we're doing it, what we think is going to happen, and why it's great. And then at the end of the interview, he says, don't get me wrong. The 12-year-old in me is very disappointed in the current me, but it's the right thing to do. I think that's great. There's a nice bit of... A nice bit of honesty coming out of that guy.
I mean, like, he's dead right. Like, you know, and who knows whether or not this will work. Mm-hmm. But it's at least he's doing something.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that anybody. Well, I think what the biggest surprise is that the cultural acceptance of nudity in America didn't progress fast enough for Playboy to just become a mainstream magazine on its own, mm-hmm. like just in its former incarnation.
Sure.
Because I think if you were to ask people 20 years ago that, like, you know, as the most forward thinking people, they're like, okay, well, the world's changing. Print is on the decline. What do you think, you know, will happen with, like, something like Playboy? Like, if even just that they're like, oh, well, there's also this culture war that is being slid, you know, toward, you know, at least tasteful nudity being something that we might accept on a more mainstream level. I think, like, that they would survive, but, you know, it's funny how fast some things change and some things don't.
I think part of it is, who had the forward? Nobody seemed to have the forward thinking in any of the publishing world, let alone them. Because to them, the internet in 1994, or whenever the threat may have first loomed, it seemed antithetical to everything they were doing, and a thing, maybe even a trend or a fad in their minds that they should fight against and not be forward thinking about.
Well, but even Playboy has always been fairly digitally forward focused. You know, there's just only so much that can happen. When you're still trying to sell a bundle of dead trees glued together, you know, and nobody wants to buy it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting to me, though, just because they're unique position. It's not the same as the New York Times trying to scramble to figure out what to do.
Well, Playboy was also one of the first shots in the culture war. Mm-hmm. You know, the fame of Playboy is something that very much has, you know, informed how people thought about mass market, you know, mass acceptance of sex, you know, because it hit that sweet spot of, like, hey, look, we are urban. You know, I think somebody in that New York Times article that went over all this, there was, like, the original pitch of, you know, Hugh Hefner in the first Playboy. And it's like, you know, like, oh, we're for men who would like to invite a young lady over and pop open a bottle of wine, discuss Nietzsche, Picasso, and of course sex. It's like, you know, put on some jazz and you know, discuss those things. And it's like, that really has always been the pitch. Mm-hmm. The pitch for Playboy is that this is this kind of, if not, you know, urban, almost, you know, European, forward thinking, we don't need to be trapped down by the morasses of you know, yesteryear kind of culture war iconography.
Yeah. When I was younger, here was the hierarchy. It was Playboy was like the granddaddy and the one that seemed to be the most mainstream.
Yes.
Then you would hear about this thing called Penthouse, which I guess was like that, but not. And then you got into your Hustler territory.
Right. Hustler and
and then after that, it was a dark morass and an abyss. You didn't know what was going on after that. Although I think my uncle knew well what was happening there.
But. My stepdad had a buddy who was moving out of his apartment or maybe getting evicted out of his apartment. We had to store a bunch of his stuff in the garage. And boy, this guy had a collection of some of those off-brand porno magazines that could not be believed.
Yeah.
Oh, my! He brought them with him?
Yeah, moved them all into the garage. Like,
oh, geez.
That was I think that's a very generational thing because that sounds about like my uncle's age. And he's the one, like Wendy told us last week, reminded us, you go to his house. It didn't matter what room you were in. There was a stack of pornographic magazines in some room you were in. Bathrooms, bedrooms, his study.
Let this be a lesson.
Yeah.
On when the kids these days wonder what was different in a bygone era, this was the difference of unlimited storage.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. When you look, because really, that is a hard drive.
Yeah.
That box of shame that people had to carry around like a scarlet letter, that's not gone away. In fact, that problem has gotten worse and more mainstream if you were to consider it a problem. That craze, the pornography craze, oh man, exploding even now as we speak.
Uh-huh.
And yet there is no stigma to it because you can put it on a hard drive and you don't have to store it in Scott's dad's garage.
Right. Right. And you're not wrong. It's also an acquisition change. Like you had to forget about storing. You had to, you know, for my uncle to collect all that stuff, he either had to brown bag it through the mail and hope my aunt never saw it, or he would have to dress up in a way that made him inconspicuous and go clear across town to some shady joint and get what he had to get. And today you just click, click, boom, right? Like it's such a different, it's such a
and
different process.
Like exactly what you may be in the mood for. Like, oh, I want something with that involves a horse. And you can instantly get it.
Well,
Whereas like, I know I have that issue somewhere.
You mean like a fistful of dollars?
Yeah, like that. Or as Wendy would say,
cat and chicken porn.
Right? Cat and chicken porn. If that's your thing, it turns out you can get that pretty quick and easy now with nobody even being the wiser. And but see, the thing is people want to say that as if that's the big explosive change in our society. It's too easy for people to get corrupted, this and that. But this is true of everything we get now. Mm-hmm. Everything is a click away. Everything is an Amazon shipment for free shipping tomorrow. Everything is like this immediate grab, not just the underbelly of the seedy porn industry.
I'm not here to. Well, no, you want to know what? I'll take a step. I think porn was a fantastic element of sexual education for me as a young person, and I think that the abundance, the more of it, the more that I saw, and the more I realized what was weird and what wasn't weird, and what was, and then I could match those experiences to my young budding life, the better and quicker I got a fuller picture of the full spectrum of sexuality and consent and like all these fairly important things that I think we are raising more sexually aware people in the best of ways because of porn.
We are going to get the biggest flood of emails disagreeing with this that we've ever gotten in the history of the show. And I look forward to it.
I went through a golden period where everybody, you know, now I can't help it. Just like, what else can I say?
Statistically speaking, my sister would have a billion things to levy against this assertion. However, I welcome the controversy and I welcome your emails disagreeing with Justin. And we were happy to revisit
forward them. Forward them on.
It's fine. It's fine.
If it like, weren't for Penthouse Forum, I would know how to please a lady.
Like, I'm not saying that it's everybody. I'm saying it was for me and it made my life a lot easier in demystifying things that would have and did terrify me.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a huge element of defining what I wanted out of, you know, a sexual existence.
Right. I yes. And yes. We're going to get emails. But it'll be good. It'll be good. It's fine. We'll get these emails and we'll check it out and we'll see what happens. We'll forward those to Justin. We may even revisit this on a future show.
Come on. Whatever.
Yeah, what's the harm? We'll talk about it. We'll discuss it further. We'll see where we end up on the other side.
And I understand where other people are coming from on it. I totally get the other side of it. Yeah. But it was just, I mean, I'm not saying all of it. I'm just saying more information is better.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of a general philosophy.
Yeah. The stuff that didn't help him specifically were
cat and chicken porn.
That did not help as much. All right. Justin, what is going on with you? Anything happening that you want to mention before we send you back to Disneyland for yet another try on Indie Disney?
TheContender.us. I'm still, we took a little bit more time working on the big post, detailing how we made $142,000 on Kickstarter and subsequently how and why we spent more than $142,000 to make this game possible. I will say this, man, I got a picture of just the final mechanicals for the box.
Yeah.
And the people, Megan Fawn at Guts and Glory, who are our design partners on everything, just printed it out and glued it onto a box themselves and like put the box together and just took a bunch of pictures. And it was like, for somebody who is, does not have a kid, it was like seeing a sonogram of like a child. Like it was
my baby.
It was definitely like, because we've been in the weeds on a lot of like really boring and terrifying things like numbers and units and what we need to sell and how much we'd make even if we sold this amount of money. Spoiler alert, less than you might think.
Yep.
At the end of the day, I just was immediately heartened again to see the fruits of the labor and just to be like, oh my God, this box looks amazing. I'm so happy with this game. I can't wait for people to get it in their hands because, ultimately that's really all that's going to matter is people being happy that they backed it or happy that they pre-ordered it so that's my
I like it. I like it. I can tell you, I can tell you, having just recently been in those same kinds of weeds on the book production, and now we're to the point that we printed out drafts for people to edit. That just even seeing the draft in a little three-wing binder was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Like whoa, that is almost a book, dude. Like
when we got the first Andrew Allen album, when we were doing Smooth Federation, and his box arrives, and it's like, oh my God. These things I've been buying at the store. I have one that actually has my name in the bottom right corner.
We made this kind of feeling.
Exactly.
It's nothing like it. So yeah, very exciting.
It's great. It's amazing. And I hope if you haven't pre-ordered it, pre-order it. If not, sign up for our mailing list. We're going to have the big, hopefully I'm going to work on that today. Yeah. And also tonight on Night Attack, are you guys familiar with this Australian thing that we've been obsessed with for like 6 months now?
Yeah.
This the bikey gang, bikey wars.
Oh yeah, no, I
haven't heard about this.
It is going to extend the show just a little bit, but which I know is a shock for anybody who's listened to Tuesdays on TMS.
They're blown away.
Just go to Bikey Wars. Just search it. BIKIEWARS.
I'm looking at it right now.
And just play the first 3 seconds because it gets a little bit. There's no curse words, but it certainly gets ribald.
All right, there's a guy dancing. Okay, let's see what happens. Oh my gosh.
Okay. I'm a bikey man from a bikey gang, living in my crack den, making crack. I love killing, thieving, and extortion. Give me 20
bucks. All right.
Simon. I heard this before your wedding. I was wondering what this was, before Night Attack, and everybody before was singing along with it, and I was like, I have never heard this. This is awesome. What the heck is this?
Yeah, that's crazy.
So it's Bikey Wars.
All right.
Bikey Wars. It's by the Australian sketch group Auntie Donna. And they, joining us from the land down under, will be on Night Attack tonight.
Wow.
So you'll want to tune in.
Wow. That's awesome. Nice get.
Also, we're going to, like, this. We have this thing lately between Brian and I where, like, we just keep doing John Stossel impressions. It's a weird thing, and I don't expect anybody to understand it, but it's gotten too far, and now we're like, we're gonna do a whole John Stossel bit tonight, and I don't know whether or not it's gonna be funny or interesting, but it'll certainly be a lot of John Stossel impressions.
Well, good. I don't think that any of what you said is a bad thing, so let's make it happen, everyone. It's Justin R. Young.
People
on...
think it's a good thing, after all.
Somebody did a video compilation of you doing that over and over for like 20 minutes.
It was 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Seven full minutes of John Stossel impersonating.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. And you also see various beard conditions on you.
Yeah. Like, well, it started because I had the mustache. I had the John Stossel mustache and I was wearing a suit. I cut quite the Stosselian figure.
Let it go forever. It's a fantastic impression and it should never end until John Stossel himself dies. And you give the eulogy. You should do the eulogy at John Stossel's funeral in voice.
Oh, gee. Well, that just, I mean, a lot of people think that wouldn't be appropriate. After all, I barely knew the man.
Get punched by a wrestler. All in proxy. It's fine. Justin R. Young on Twitter. Night Attack tonight. Everything else, just follow him. He'll tell you he's doing things.
Yeah, Justin R. Young. See you guys.
See you guys. Bye. Or not guys. Bye, guys.
See you, guy.
Bye, guy. See you, buddy.
Hey, buddy. Hey.
That's it for the show, everybody. Thank you for joining us for Hard Trivia Day and Justin Robert Young time. Later today, I'll be here in about 20 minutes, I'll be recording new Hypothetical Help with Terpster, so watch for that. Yeah, if you're a backer of the Hypo Help Patreon, then you'll be getting the episode later today. If you do not, you'll be getting it on Tuesday or Wednesday. And then, a reminder, the 50% clearance sale, frogpants.com/store. Right now, use the code... Need room. You get 50% off anything in the clearance section. If you want to get there quicker and just straight to it and not have to hunt around to find it when you get on the site, go to tiny.cc/myextraclearance. And stuff's already flying off the shelf. It's only while we have it. So we're literally making physical room for Kickstarter loot rewards and books and stuff coming because we're to that point.
Literally making physical room.
Yeah. We're taking
making literal room.
And we're taking losses on much of this. We just need to move some
things. Yeah, just got to get, got to haul out some product.
This is not a money grab. It's actually kind of a pain in the butt grab, but it's worth it because we need the space. All right, that's it. Let's see. Frogpants.com/TMS is our website. TheMorningStream@gmail.com is where you should send your feedback as often as you like. Please do. 801-471-0462 is our phone number. Leave voicemails there. You can find Brian at Coverville, me at Scott Johnson, and the show at Morning Stream. That's all on Twitter. And our Frog Pants Reddit is frogpants.reddit.com. Many cool people chatting over there, so go check that out. I thinky that's everything-y.
Okay.
I'm told that the Chromebook arrives, so I'm going to go mess with that.
Ooh, you go play with your Chromebook, I'll play with the 3D printer arrived.
Did it get there yet? Do you know?
I haven't heard the doorbell ring. I'm thinking that I should be hearing a truck back up when that thing is getting delivered. Beep, 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 and a forklift.
You just tear up there because it's probably a signed for deal, right?
I'll bet. It's from Amazon. It's an Amazon Prime. So usually you don't have to, but I'm wondering if there's like a size limit that says, yeah, if it's bigger than such and such or heavier than such and such, we have to have somebody sign for it to show that we delivered it.
It seems big ticket enough to worry about it to me, but
yeah, you think, but
who knows? Well, let me know.
I can't wait to print something humongous on it.
Tomorrow we'll do a full update. We'll find out what's up.
Yes.
And we will be back tomorrow with a brand new show. So come on back now, you're here. All right, that's it. Let's get out of here. Music from Brian, please.
Yes, Stuart wrote in, said, I've been on an ELO kick recently and loving that they have a new album coming out soon. So I've been hunting some great covers to add to my collection. Could you please play Gigantor's Mr. Blue Sky? Or if not, maybe your favorite ELO cover. If possible, can this be played on TMSPM? It's funny, then pick a date that's got a TMSPM on it, Stuart. I just realized that you had that on there.
Yeah.
Oh, if possible, well, request it on the 15th if you want that. All right.
Okay.
We're going to play it today.
All right.
Besides, it's morning. You play Mr. Blue Sky in the morning. You don't play it at night. That's antithetical.
Yeah, this is Mr. Blue Sky, not Mr. Poo Sky.
Yeah. Right on. All right. Mr. Blue Sky by the band Gigantor, punk band. And this is that melding of those two worlds. Came out in 1994 on their album, It's Gigantic. Here is ELO's Mr. Blue Sky.
All right, I'll play a terrible laugh like the one I just did at the end of the show, so stay tuned for that. Here's your song. See you guys tomorrow.
Sun is shining in the sky. There ain't a cloud inside. It's not raining. Everybody's in a plan. Don't you know it's a beautiful new day? Running down the avenue. See how the sun shines brightly. And the city on the streets that once was pretty.
Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Ugh.